Alan Quinn Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2017. Lecture 24, delivered on May 3, 2017. The title of this lecture is Review for the Final Exam.
Okay, today, review for the final exam. The technicals of it are there are seven questions, you answer five of them. No more than that. You will have three of them that will be just copy and paste from exam one or two. In other words, two might come from exam one from exam two, something like that. And then the other four will be fresh. Many of them will be from the original reviews I did for these tests, for the midterms one and two. Also, you're allowed your note cards from exams one and two, and you're allowed one more for this, although there's no new material, you might be better aware of how to form a note card now. I don't know, but that'll be three that you can use on the exam. And the strict application of the rubric will be enforced. In other words, spelling and all that, you'll lose points for those in trying to do more than two sentences or try to write me a list. Just give me sentences. They are straight up. You're better now than you were at the beginning at knowing how to answer my questions, teaching how to be good automatons for your future in the workforce and all of that, as it were. Let me think what I'm trying, how I want to proceed. Oh, I've got exam twos to pick up if any of you haven't gotten yours yet, right there after class. Total of seven, and you choose five. Don't try to answer more than five, okay? It's a grinder, and I will be posting somewhat regularly on Twitter as I'm grading exams, so you'll see pictures of cats, coffee, and me grading exams. So make sure that you do well so that you don't have ugly pictures of me, like that one that was flowing all over Snapchat of me and the horse head. Really? Snapchat of all the things? Okay. Anyway. I'm going to go through some new things. You've got your reviews for the first two, and I'm going to go back and I'm going to talk more about that in a minute. But let me give you some more fresh topics to focus on. Make sure you understand what a yield curve is and how it can be used to forecast recessions and inflations. Okay? This was the second week of class, and I was showing you dynamic yield curves and talking about them and talking about what I was seeing and how teaching you how to look at them for different things, like a normal economy proceeding and then a recessionary or an inflationary. Yeah.
You said understand what a yield curve is and how it can be used to
Forecast recessions and inflations, or even just good times. Remember that the yield curve is a tool among many, but it has a unique ability to be able to at least sometimes forecast recessions. And it can also show you evidence of inflations as well. Know how that's done. Remember those lectures? Go back to lecture two, I believe. Yeah, lectures two and three. And you will remember, and also the dynamic yield curves that I showed you in class. And it might not hurt to keep an eye on those as you approach graduation to see what your prospects are for good times or not. But as I had told you before, the yield curve as I was seeing it was beginning to give the warnings of a recession, and we have just had a rather noticeable weak month of job growth. It was quite weak, and I would imagine that that is the foreshadowing of what is to come. Know what I was looking at. Remember it. Okay, now, also, as far as other matters go that I talked about in class, and I've also reviewed this to some extent, let me give you a broader point, a perspective. Know what risk is, the kinds of risk there are, how risk and return are related. Okay, so know what risk is. What are the kinds of risk? Also, know how we reduce risk. Know why risk is valuable. Why risk is valuable. Why do we want risk? That doesn't mean we want lots of risk, but why do we want risk? What's it related to? If you want one thing, then you're going to have to take risk, but you don't have to take all risk. A caution to you, make sure that you don't use the word volatility when you are talking about one of the kinds of risk. Volatility is just a word for describing total risk, the standard deviation, if you will. But if you're specifically referring to one kind of risk, or even the other kind, they are not volatility. The two of them together are volatility. Go.
You said find the relationship between risk and return as well.
Well, that's one part of it. Yeah, obviously, there's a relationship. And no risk as a large thing. It looms large in all of our lives, and especially in finance, and actually in other disciplines as well. Marketing, you're not going to sell a product unless you take risks. And that doesn't mean that you're going to win, because risk can be your enemy. But it's also the thing that you have to embrace if you want return. But yeah, that's that risk and return relationship. I don't know if I would be stupid enough to ask you what's the relationship between risk and return on the final, because you would all nail that question, and I'm trying to get as many of you to get low grades as possible. No. As far as broadly speaking, you're going to get a couple of definitions. Just hit me right in the square in the eyes with your definition, okay? Don't try to beat around the bush. If I say, what is beta? Just give me beta. What's the relationship between net present value and internal rate of return? Give it to me. What's capital structure? What's optimal capital structure? Watch your words. If you mean minimize, don't write accidentally maximize. Make sure you understand the claims on cash flow. Who has the prior? Who has the residual? Okay. Know about liquidity. What is the upside of liquidity and what's the downside of liquidity? What is money? Don't say M1, M2, and M3. For heaven's sakes, I've had that happen and you just lose all the points. I'm talking about what is money and what are the three kinds of money. Now, some of these are repetitive. Make sure you go back and look at the review for the two midterm exams to fill in any gaps. I'm just emphasizing some important concepts that are large in finance that I would probably, at least in some way, hit you with at least one or two of these. Um, know the relationship, and I brought this up on the for the first exam. It's a hard question. It is a level 5 question, okay? There are two of them that are kind of associated. What happens to the price of a bond as the spread between coupon and yield increases? What happens to the price of a bond as the spread between coupon and yield increases? Now, I'm not saying which way the spread goes. I'm asking you what happens if the spread increases. That means that the yield could go farther above the coupon or the yield could go farther below the coupon. So don't say the bond price decreases because you would be wrong in that. Know some basic things. I mean, beta, market cap. I mentioned flight to quality. Make sure you understand it. What is flight to quality? Know the components of an interest rate, and that one's the one. There's the risk-free rate, and then the risk premium, which comprises the default, maturity, and illiquidity premiums. Again, if I said, what are the components of an interest rate, you would answer something to the effect that there is the risk-free rate, and then there is the risk premium, which comprises the default, maturity, and illiquidity premiums. You would not need to explain them. You would just need to give me what they are. What are the components of an interest rate? There's the risk-free rate, which is in all interest rates at the bottom. And then there's the risk premium. And the risk premium comprises the default premium, the maturity premium, and the illiquidity premium. Or I could just ask you, what are the components of the risk premium? And you could shorten it up a little bit. And you just give me. Just give them to me. Don't go into a long-winded description. Another one that is more of a level 4 or 5, what happens to the bond price as the term approaches zero? What happens to the bond price as the term approaches zero? This is an extraordinarily short answer, but if you don't know the answer, you're going to go all kinds of ways trying to find something that I would give credit for, and that doesn't work too well with me. What happens to the price of a bond as the term approaches zero? A caution on this, the term is how long the bond has remaining. The maturity is when it expires. Okay, so don't confuse those two terms. The term is when how long it has left. So in your case, your term is 20 years. You expire in 2047. Okay? Your maturity is in 2000. Now, obviously, that's ridiculous. You'll live to be a very old man. And then you'll know what it's like. Oh, sorry. Now, taking you through the meat grinder on some of the questions from the second half of the material. just to make sure that you've got them locked in. When I ask about obviously, I'm why is debt more preferable for large firms than for small firms? Why is debt more preferable for large firms than for small firms as a source of capital? Now, this is one that could have been on the second exam, and it could well be on the final, but it would be a more detailed question. Give two ways that a portfolio can be diversified, that you can create a well-diversified portfolio.
You
want two or three? No, I said this time two, because I'm going to also ask you, what is the upside and the downside of each of these methods? Okay. Now, there were three, so you could pull any two of the three, but you've got to know the upside of each of the ones you choose and the downside. And I'll even tell you one. ETFs, the upside is you can trade them anytime you want, but the downside is that there's a commission every time you trade.
There's a
commission. It's in your notes. Okay. Now, something related to one I signaled would be an important one. You can get it really well or you can blow it when you see that a stock analyst has claimed that he shows you the price chart, says it's a highly volatile stock, and therefore it's very risky. Why is he probably wrong? And that goes back to the two kinds of risk. Price shows you volatility, no doubt about that. But volatility is not what we care about. It's only one part of the volatility that gets us all kinds of excited. Because the other kind, we don't get a reward for. Stock analyst says that the stock chart shows that a price is highly volatile. The stock's price is highly volatile. Why is he probably, and therefore it's a very risky stock. Why is he probably wrong? This goes back to the whole point that volatility is not what we care about. Because volatility is total risk, and that's not what we care about. Only one kind of that risk get us all kinds of excited. The other kind we should get rid of. So looking at a price chart doesn't tell us anything about the risk. There are other things that we can use, and that's another one that I haven't brought up yet. What are two technical measures of the risk of a stock? What are two technical measures of the risk of a stock? Now, one of those you should know right off the top of your head. That's beta, obviously. But there's another one, too, that I talked about. And I showed you in the screens. Sometimes they are actually at odds with each other. And, you know, that's when judgment comes in. That's when you begin to use your wisdom and your seasoning in the business. Okay, now one last one, just an important consideration. This one is sort of a capture of something a little bit larger. Why do interest rates affect the number and risk of projects that companies accept? Why do changes in interest rates and interest rates themselves, why do changes in interest rates and the interest rates themselves affect the number and risk, let's put it this way, the number and risk of projects companies accept? Now, you'll remember I wrote it right over here. I showed you how rising interest rates do. And I showed you why. You don't need to tell me the why. You have to tell me, well, you need to tell me the why, but you have to tell me what interest rate changes and levels of interest rates do to the number and risk of projects accepted. Yes? Oh, you're mean. You know what? I can see the writing right there on that board. Well, obviously, you're going to want to listen to all of the lectures again anyway. So, but I'll tell you, let me tell you this. It would have been in the first 4 weeks, because that's one of those key concepts. So it would have been in lectures 1 through about 6 where I would have done it. Look at interest rates. There should have been one that was interest rates. Now, there's one other thing. I might ask you something about the Federal Reserve. I would not ask you a heavy-duty question, but I could ask you, what are the 3 duties of the Federal Reserve or something like that? That doesn't mean, now remember, one of those has 3 subcategories. That's not what I'm asking. I'm asking, what are the 3 broad duties of the Federal Reserve? And I think I've taken down the link to that little video that was done, and I might put that up in the scrolling marquee on the sideboard so you can watch that one again. Now, I'm going to have you answer some, ask some questions, and then I've got to do the student evaluation, so I have to leave once that process has started. So if you've got questions, I need to know them now. Yes?
Polar bear.
Huh?
Did you know anything about polar bear?
Oh, I thought you said polar bear. No. I was going to say, yeah, he drinks Coke. No. That was more background, trying to make you feel sophisticated about the subject matter. By the way, there's actually, on Wall Street, there's this giant bronze bull. It's sort of like an iconic figure, and people pose by the bull. People do unspeakable things to the bull as far as graffiti goes sometimes. But if you want to be a bull, go to Wall Street and stand in front of the bull and have someone do a picture of you. You can't do a selfie because it's so big. You'd have one horn and you, and that looks weird. Okay, what else? Yes, go.
Unsystematic and systematic risk.
Yeah, the 2 kinds of risk there are. That goes with that whole thing, no risk. Understand all of the different aspects, systematic versus unsystematic. And again, if I ask you what is distinguished between systematic and unsystematic risk, don't answer me one is non-diversifiable and the other is diversifiable, okay? You have to tell me what each one is. That's like that one I asked, what is optimal capital structure? There were several people who said that's the best capital structure. Well, duh, but anyway. other questions? Now, it's 2 hours. Yeah, go ahead.
Hurdle rate.
I will not ask it. I will not ask it. Okay? See, this is what I want you to ask. It's things that I can say. I'm not going to bother you with that. Because that cuts down on the number of things that I could ask you about. A little bit, anyway. So, I already hit it. I'm not going to do it again. That doesn't mean I might not ask you about capital structure or why companies aren't 100% debt as their capital structure. But I've already covered that one. That one's too easy. Almost all of you got it right, except for those who said optimal capital structure is the best capital structure. Or the ones who accidentally, I think it had to have been accidental. It's the weighted average cost of capital it's the combination of debt and equity that maximizes weighted average cost of capital. Yeah, that's a goal of every firm is to maximize their costs. And I'm almost sure that was a mistake. That didn't mean I had any mercy, but.
Wow.
I know, right? You know?
That hurts.
I know. go ahead. The agency dilemma? No, I will not. That was an important lecture, but I will not ask about it because I didn't have enough time to really cover it in class well. Yes? I said that could be on there. That one's fair game. I'm not saying it will, but it might not be, but it's an important concept. Why we see a stock market, if we see a stock market falling, but we'll see the bond market rising, that's clearly a flight to quality. Everyone's bailing out of risky investments and moving into safer investments. And then, of course, if you see both the stock and the bond market falling, what do you expect to see rising? Well, first you'll see commodities prices, because the riskiest are stocks. If investors are moving out of stocks, they'll buy bonds, drive those prices up. But if the bonds are going down too, that means that the investors are getting out of stocks and bonds, and they're going to something that's even safer, which would be commodities. Metals. Go.
Debt's more favorable than capital.
No, debt is preferable to... Why is debt preferable to equity? Okay? Yes. Yeah. Say it. I've got it up on the scrolling marquee. There. Is this Thursday? Is this the one from 1 to 3 or 10 to noon?
It's 10.
10, okay. Yeah. So that's early morning for some of you. So, and of course I don't have a marker, so I'm going to have to do this. Hang on here. Bear with me. Now, this is when... you get to do your evil deed. This is what you put at the top. That's the code at the top. Now, there's pencils right here for you. I need 3 volunteers. Go ahead, please, come on down. I have to leave when you're doing this. So, since I'm not having volunteers, now they get the questionnaire and the sheet, and then just, I wish we could, but we can't. Collect them and put them back, and then you take them up and slide them under the door. Do you know where the finance office is? It's up on the 4th floor. It's at the top of the stairs, right at the top of the stairs on the other side. Okay? I got 2. Excellent. Outstanding. Thank you.
Do we get extra credit for this?
Actually, send me a message, maybe 1 point. Okay? Yes. So you got to send me an email message that you served the cause, but fill out one yourselves too.
Absolutely.
That's all I have for you today and forever. I thank you.
Elvis has left the building. Knock it off.